Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 Fan, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. We asked going into the break what you would do for shooting as well as that golfer.
We got a good text. Alex from Maple says, "You must have no children. I would break a kid's leg just to go golfing."
That's see, good one. But we can actually ask a man who broke his child's leg. It's Ben Ennis. How are you doing today? What was it like? Did you feel satisfaction when you did that? How's it going?
It was awesome. It was really great. No, it was horrible. I was going down a slide with my then 2-year-old. And he was sitting in my lap, and don't do that. Nobody told me this, and I'm going to save somebody lots of heartbreak by telling them this piece of advice. Do not put your kid on your lap going down the slide, because he got his foot stuck on the side of the slide, and we were going down, and it was like a hairline fracture. He was in a blue cast for 4 weeks. It was brutal, and he was trying to be so tough in the car. He's like, "I think I'm okay." Like, can you walk? He's like, "No."
Father like son, two guys with very, very brittle legs.
Yeah.
You know, very little brittle leg bones. The two Ennis boys
some
breaking
milk.
Well, one of them breaks their legs playing disc golf, the other breaks his leg on a slide. Like, boy, this is not exact. You guys aren't exactly making it to the NFL in that family. Like, there's no genes going to the big leagues. This is not the stuff for you guys.
No, playground equipment is dangerous. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
There's no
the slide?
Excuse, disc,
the slide.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I mean,
so,
I've fallen
swings,
off the monkey
maybe.
Bars. That's dangerous. But
yeah.
Elementary school I went to did not have a lot of money, and the slide was wood. That was Splinter Central. So I will.
How's that real?
A wooden slide?
Yeah, and it was like supposed to be finished.
Yeah, it was in the
so
junkyard
like
in Drumbo.
Kind of, and it wasn't. They replaced it when I was in grade 6. It was like a big deal. You got a plastic slide. But I can attest, the old school, poor school slides were definitely dangerous.
Wow.
Not broken leg dangerous, but butt sliver and hand sliver dangerous.
So, Benny, we're going to get your thoughts on the Leafs. Like, I want to know where you're kind of at with the series after 1-1, but first I got to start with the Blue Jays, okay? Because this is getting a little weird. This is a little strange of a team to talk about. I don't know if I feel great about this start now or if I feel bad about this start now, because they're winning all these one-run games and they've had really great pitching, but the offense, I'm texting with you, you know I'm having some hot take texts, you're already prepared for this conversation, but it's like, okay, alright, Bo was in a bit of a slump and that's fine, they're missing Teoscar Hernandez. I watched the end of the Dodgers last night, right? I just throw it on, I'm going to bed, it's on secondary viewing, right? I just have a baseball laptop running and I watched the Dodgers game, and the Dodgers, like, have you seen their lineup? There's no let up. They have one guy named Gavin Lux who hits 9 for them, and guess what he's better than? Like every single Blue Jays player who hits 7, 8, 9 right now. Every one of their other guys is a scary stick. They go, oh, Cody Bellinger stinks. Oh, Justin Turner stinks. I'd give an arm and a leg to have two guys who stink like those two guys in this Blue Jays lineup. How do you make of this, or what do you make of just kind of this start offensively, balancing kind of what your expectations are? Because to me, one of the biggest things of the season was supposed to be the offense is special, and I feel like there are some special offensive players, but that the offense itself is not all of a sudden going to become 2015.
They're off to a slow start offensively. Here's what I don't want to see. Too many games where the bottom three of your order is Vinny Capra, Tyler Heineman, and Bradley Zimmer, which predictably went 0-6 yesterday in that game. No, the offense is off to a slow start. I mean, the only guy that's really been going since the get-go is George Springer. Vlad had the three-homer game in New York and had a pretty big hit yesterday. He's been fine, but he hasn't been at his most Vladish. I do think Bo is looking pretty Bo-like, and
yep,
the underlying numbers would suggest that he's pretty close to the guy that he was the last year that led the American League in hits. He's going to get there. He swings at everything, and when it's not going right, it looks ugly for him. They just haven't hit with runners in scoring position. And that, as we know, is something that is not going to continue all season long. They went through a horrible stretch of hitting with runners in scoring position. If you will recall, at the end of last season, right before they went absolutely crazy in September, right? Like in August, there were some horrible offensive games in Detroit, I remember, where it looked like they were never going to hit again. And Bo and Vlad specifically looked like they were almost done, like the season was catching up to them. And then it all regressed to the positive sense, and they started coming up with hits in clutch situations. I think they're a better offense than they've shown so far. Clearly, they missed Teoscar Hernandez. One guy shouldn't be the difference between a bad offensive team and a great offensive team, and it's not. And it feels like they're a bad offensive team. I mean, the numbers would suggest they're off to a slow start, but they're kind of a middle-of-the-pack offensive team, considering how
they're
how
18th in on-base percentage. They're 18th in on-base percentage
so
far.
Anyway, I mean, that if you're going to use that measure to evaluate this offense, yeah, they're always going to be near the bottom of the pack because they don't take walks, right? They got one guy that takes walks in Matt Chapman. Well, and George Springer will take the occasional walk. They do not take walks. They lead the major leagues in home runs. They're going to hit for average, reasonable, respectable average, and hit a bunch of home runs. They're off to a slow start offensively, but the pitching has been the top three dudes, save for game one out of Berríos, and now if Kikuchi can give them something every 5 days, like this is a team that's going to make its bones, I think, on pitching and defense, which was spectacular yesterday. And if they have a slightly above average offense and still one of the best hitters in all of baseball and Vlad Jr., that's still a pretty good that's a pretty good formula for success here. Is their lineup as good as the presumptive World Series favorites who have a $300 million payroll, the Dodgers? No. If that's the bar we're judging them against, no, the Dodgers have a better roster. The Dodgers.
I thought
better.
That was the bar we were judging them against. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought this was America. I thought that this was like this is. I'm sorry. When did the goalpost move here? Because coming into the season, it was supposed to be all Blue Jays offense, Blue Jays offense, Blue Jays offense. They lose one guy, and all of a sudden it's like, oh well, you know, they don't take any walks. And why is one guy getting hurt now? Vinny Capra is in the lineup with Zimmer and with Tapia and with Zach Collins. Like, there's too many. That's more than one guy. Like, last I checked, is more than one guy. Like, that's just me.
No,
I thought that one for one is one. You know, like that's what I thought.
I said this at the end of yesterday's show. It's not the biggest deal, and the Blue Jays have had this incredible success. And there is a benefit to doing this, but Charlie Montoyo, and I wonder if it goes back to his days as an extra guy, he doesn't like to have the extra guys sit on the bench for too long. He doesn't like them to get stale. Like, he thinks if they're up with the major league club that they have to start every once in a while. To that, I would say, no, they don't. They really don't. It's fine. Because it doesn't seem like the extra reps is improving Bradley Zimmer's stroke. I don't know. Maybe Vinny Capra is going to end up in Cooperstown one day. That probably won't be with a team that has World Series aspirations. You know, I've never heard of him. He's a 6th-round pick. So, yeah, I don't get that. Those guys should just be on the bench in case of emergencies. Zimmer's probably going to get the occasional start because you want Springer out of center field every once in a while. But, yeah, I don't see the need. I mean, it's a long season. I get it, and nobody plays 162. But that was kind of an egregious bottom third of the lineup yesterday.
So there's a lot there to unpack. And the Dodgers as a bar, sure, the Jays aren't going to pay into the Gavin luxury tax.
Oh,
but one of the things I harped on
that was a good one.
One of the things I harped on all last season, and in setting up this season is. Obviously, it's really, really important to have great players. It's important to have Teoscar healthy. It's important to have the top 4 or 5 in that order clicking. But what is also really important when you're in a playoff race and every game feels like it matters and you're already looking at the standings for how far behind the Yankees are is not playing bad players a lot. And it's early and some of this will normalize, but the Jays have 11 players right now who have been below replacement level so far. And some of those guys might round out of it. Kevin Biggio might figure out how to get on base again after a rehab start. Kikuchi looked good yesterday. You know, I don't know. There are people who say Raimel Tapia's batted ball stuff is encouraging, even though it hasn't resulted in being on base at all yet.
Fly ball outs are so encouraging.
Those things will tilt in the right direction, but are we thinking that Vinny Capra's a guy? Are we thinking that Bradley Zimmer's going to be anything other than what he's shown in his career? Are we thinking Taylor Salcedo is going to be anything other than what he's shown in his career? No, I don't think that you're expecting that. So you do have to look at ways to improve that back end, whether it's waiver claims, whether it's, you know, rotating a couple guys through there, whether it's, Ben, to your point, shortening the bench entirely and just being like, look, we don't have enough depth. We got to play our main guys a little bit more. And you got to be careful about that and rotate the DH days around and stuff. But I don't think that's a worse idea than playing literally Tyler Heineman three times in a week. Yeah, there's a lot there. And I'm going a little bit insane with the baseball's overall offensive environment, where the Jays have been not good offensively and they're still 5% above league average with a 703 OPS. The walk rate stuff is the most interesting part of what you said to me, though, Ben, because they're third to last in walk rate.
Yep.
And I thought this was really highlighted in the Jameson Taillon start, where he goes six innings and doesn't even get into the mid-70s for pitches. And I think there's some process stuff the Jays need to look at and improve on there, because of the teams that walk fewer than 8% of the time, the Jays are the only one of those seven that aren't way, 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 way below average offensively. Like, there is a case that there's going to be negative regression for the Jays just based on their plate discipline approach. So, yeah, part of that is on the top guys to continue doing what they do and bow round out of it. But part of that is also you're playing a lot of guys at the bottom of the order who the best we could probably hope for is work good plate appearances, keep the lineup moving, make the pitchers work, and they're not even coming through with that part of it.
So you guys might have me wrong here, because I understand that the Jays have some special players up at the top. It's very clear. I don't think Bo and his slumps has been one of my concerns. That's not it at all. I don't care if Vladdy has a little mini slump. I don't care if Springer scuffles for a couple of games or if Teoscar Hernandez comes back and doesn't hit right away. My issue right now is that all of last year we went, what do the Jays not do? They don't walk enough. And they said, we got to get more on-base guys during the offseason. And they went out and they got a bench with a bunch of these guys who don't get on base. They added Matt Chapman, who draws the odd walk, but he's also not he's not a massive bat. Like, he's not replacing Semien's offense this year. I think that even if we look at him as a big-time positive regression guy and he hits the bomb yesterday, that it's a far, 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 far cry to have him end up with Semien's numbers. And I just look at this team, and we talked about the excitement of a World Series and them being a World Series favorite, and they're missing a lot of bats. Like, they are not very deep offensively, and I'm kind of looking at this like, how does this change? I know the top five guys are going to hit. I know that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. every once in a while and Matt Chapman every once in a while are going to look like, wow, those guys are scary at the plate. Maybe Kirk gets back a little bit closer to that. But it just they feel like four bats away right now, like three bats away right now. Like, that's a lot of sticks that I just don't like, that are empty sticks in the lineup every single night.
Yeah, I mean, there were, again, that lineup yesterday was not, I don't think, representative of the lineup we're going to see at the end of the season. Like, saying they're four bats away, I mean, look at this lineup when it's healthy. Who are the bats that are no good that you'd like to replace, right? Like, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left field, Teoscar Hernandez in right field, Alejandro Kirk as the DH, or Zach Collins, I guess.
Alejandro Kirk is number one. I don't have any faith that Alejandro Kirk is a guy.
That's one guy.
Yeah,
but
that's
one. Who else do you think needs to be replaced offensively when this team is
healthy? No. What I'm saying is they feel like multiple bats right now after being down one guy, because they can't suffer any slumps, because none of those guys get on base consistently, where all of a sudden you're just like, you're turning the roster over, you are working those ABs. There's nobody that gets on base. What I'm saying is they went into an offseason with two clear directives: get more on base and make sure that you have more versatility, which was like more left-hand hitting. And we sort of came out of it and went, they did great because they got Chapman. And now I'm still looking at it with my same take from the very beginning, which is they never made themselves into a special offense, and that people talking about them like they were going to be that Dodgers team look wrong. And I look right. That's what I wanted you to say, is I look right and my offseason take was correct. Thank you.
I do not agree. I do think, though, that the strength of this team is not its offense. I'll agree with you in that regard. I think the strength of this team is its top three in the rotation, and more specifically, its top two, where, like, Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman might be the two best starting pitchers in the American League. they're unreal, and Jose Barrios is Mr. Consistency, right? Like year after year after year. And again, if you can get something out of Kikuchi, who's throwing 97 from the left side, which is not something that grows on trees, that's a playoff rotation. And the defense that they play, as long as Bo figures it out at shortstop, is the strength of this team. I do think the offense is above average, and as Blake says, even right now it's above average, which is
somehow
horrifying. The sport that I love looks like as broken as it ever has, and there's going to be massive changes this offseason, and I don't think eliminating the shift is really all that impactful, and the only thing that needs tweaking, and it won't be the only thing that is tweaked this offseason. The offense is better than it's looked. The offense is also, even in its current form, has sort of weirdly produced less than it should have because of the running and runners in scoring position thing. Like, the sequencing has been bad on this team, and that will have a positive regression in the coming days. And then when they're fully healthy and they're not playing Vinny Capra, it's a much better team. Stop playing the bad players.
Like I said, 11 guys who've been below replacement level so far. So let's take JD's preseason take, and let's take your affinity for hypothetical trades. Let me throw a name at you. So you just went through the order, and there are a lot of spots that would be difficult to upgrade or that you're just okay with in general. But the one where JD pushed back was that DH / backup catcher / backup first base spot that is right now, even when they're healthy, Kirk / Collins / rotating day off. The Washington Nationals are irredeemably bad. They're 9-17. They have a switch hitting slugging first baseman named Josh Bell, who is a pending free agent who only makes $10 million. And for a couple years now has absolutely mashed right-handed pitching from the left side of the plate. Are we too early, Ben, to start looking at guys like that and trying to figure out what that might cost?
No, I don't think you're too early to look at that. I mean, nothing gets consummated at this point in the season. Like, nothing of that significance. Like, I gave the Jays kudos last season for pulling off the trades for Trevor Richards and Adam Simber, which was in, like, what, June? July? Like, it's like we're still at least a couple of months away from pulling the trigger on anything. And you know what? This start, while it maybe slightly, they've been getting the results that are slightly luckier than they should have gotten. What it's done is it's kind of, you know, eliminated any type of pressure coming off the offseason and the expectations of being a World Series team and a division winner, that you don't have to do anything crazy. But yeah, it's funny how we spent an offseason thinking about Freddie Freeman, but the fit's not, and it really isn't, because Freddie Freeman has to play a lot of first base. But yeah, the idea of a first base DH type is that hits from the left side. Like, if Joey Votto was not the worst player on planet Earth, like, that guy, again, I would revisit that. But yeah, he may be done, cooked beyond all recognition. I think it's probably at this point the number one need for this team is, yeah, another left-handed bat. We knew it was a need going into this season. They tried to get Jose Ramirez, who is
got Ronald Tapia, though. Better. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to push back a little bit, though, on the, like, nothing happens until July and there's not necessarily urgency, because, sure, the 16-10 start and the 9-2 record or whatever it is in one-run games, it's better to have had that stuff than not. But if we're projecting this team forward and we're trying to evaluate where they really are, that is not a great indicator of their overall quality. And even when guys get healthy, you know, there are still some holes. And I don't mean that to say that other teams don't have holes. They do, obviously. Every team has a weakness. But the Jays have had this start that is buoyed by Gausman and Manoah being about as good as we can hope for, and some fortune or elite execution one-run games. And they're still 2.5 back in the division and only half a game up on the Rays. And I don't know that with the new playoff format, you really want to go into a wild card scenario. So I just bring it up earlier than I expect, because these games count as much, right? These games count as much as the ones in September. And it's always kind of bothered me that win now teams wait until the very last moment to address needs. And I know your needs could shift. Maybe someone starts raking. Maybe someone comes up. Maybe you get a weakness somewhere else. But I don't love the idea of, well, everything can wait because you're 16-10. I'm I'm going beyond what you said there, yeah. I realize. I just think it's too tight and winning the division is too valuable.
Blake, I get it. I understand where both you guys are coming from. It's just like, yeah, last year it felt insanely early when the Blue Jays did make those trades, and I just think you need two to tango and no one actually does it. It's an unfortunate business practice for baseball that we don't get to talk about trades all year long, but it just doesn't happen. I guess to me, like, this entire conversation is just simply, well, the expectation for me this year was that the Blue Jays are a World Series winner. I don't disagree with what you said, Ben. Obviously, how could you push back the idea that they're a pitching team right now? The pitching looks great. And I do think that Kikuchi's going to give you enough. And honestly, between Ross Stripling and Hyunjin Ryu and then the potential of Nate Pearson getting back healthy, I'm not even worried about like the depth of the starting pitching. The bullpen has looked good. They've got multiple arms in there that I semi-trust. They could easily add another bullpen arm come deadline time and bolster that unit like most good World Series teams do. I'm saying that right now, as I start this season, they are really missing another bat, which was what they missed all along. And Ben, that's the point, like I said, I was trying to make this entire time, is we talked about fit and DH, and you can't have a DH / first baseman. You don't want to have another guy who doesn't fit defensively and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm kind of looking at that like, absolutely, yes, you do, because we prioritized Alejandro Kirk over other players in terms of putting him in the DH spot. And maybe he bounces back, right? Maybe he does that. And he starts to look himself again, and he starts to rake. But even then, it's like he's a good at-bat. He's a good bat. He's not an elite bat. I wish they had one more elite bat. I feel like they were one more elite bat. I don't know if Josh Bell, if it's elite, but they're one more guy like that away from me feeling great about this lineup. And it's going to be a while before they're able to address that. It's going to be a while before they're able to go out and do that. And I kind of feel as though, I'm sorry, that was a failing of the offseason. You knew that you needed on base. You knew that you needed a lefty stick. You relied on Alejandro Kirk, and that's a tough one. What's especially more difficult is, as we're talking about this stuff, I'm going, you know, Rowdy Tellez hit his 7th home run yesterday. I know that Trevor Rich is all right and whatever, and I was trading Rowdy a billion times over. I cut Rowdy 1,000 times, so I'm the dead last person who can say this, but yeah. It would be nice to have that guy. It would be nice to have the guy with 7 home runs with Milwaukee right now.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Rowdy Tellez. And yeah, okay. His 7 walks, 18 strikeouts, okay. I mean, maybe he can keep it going for an entire season. I think he's mostly a platoon guy, and you can't play him against lefties. But yeah, I don't think Rowdy Tellez is the difference between this team winning a World Series and not.
I'll tell you this, he'd be better than Kirk.
Yeah, well... this point, yeah, sure. I don't know what is going on with Alejandro Kirk because, yeah, no, his previous slumps, I can point to the process being good and the hard contact being there and him likely regressing positively. Like, there is a lot of weirdness happening there with Kirk. He's just making weak contact. And I think what's happened to him is what's happened to catchers a million times over again. It's what happened to Danny Jansen before he maybe has figured it out again, is that he worked on his defense, and his defense has been much better according to like every metric, according to everybody who's played the position. He's been a better defender this year, but then he forgot how to hit. So yeah, I don't know necessarily what to make of that. Maybe getting his first extra base hit a couple of days ago, it makes him a better offensive player. I mean, Gabriel Moreno is still a potential factor on this team and apparently a great defender too. Maybe that's the everyday catcher, but then you're still looking for a DH, but maybe he's a guy that injects some offense into this team. I don't think that's the guy that you should be relying on to provide the extra offensive boost that you're looking for going into a postseason. But here's what I feel comfortable in saying, that this team will add a bat before the deadline.
Yeah, I think so too. Either way, think that they kind of blew it in the offseason. Also, I never want them to do player one-for-one trades because, yeah, Rowdy for Richards and my guy, new Randall, is doing the carrying an offense through May thing again in Colorado where he's OPSing almost 900. He's got like 24 hits to start the season. Absolute animal in April, May. Don't you ever forget it. This is Randall time all the way through, especially at that field. Okay, I have one thing for you guys, and this is kind of for the group that I really want everybody to weigh in on, that I was thinking about last night before we finish on a Leafs thought here, is, so we have the game the other night with the umpires where Vladdy touches the, I can't remember who he, was it Falefa? Who did he actually tag? Who did he lay the tag down on? Who cares?
Now, who can remember?
Who can remember? Vlad, there's the missed calls, and people are losing their minds, including me, who put every empire on the sun. We've got these playoff series now where officials are injecting themselves more and more. I don't know if you guys saw the Phoenix Suns game last night, but DeAndre Ayton's getting into foul trouble, and they're calling flagrant fouls on plays that are absolutely unbelievable, so stupid. There's like multiple times in this game where the refs are just over-inserting themselves. We saw Raptors fans with the same thing, with the complaining about the officials, and I know we think this is this market, but like, you had names like Nick Wright in sports media yesterday having tweets like, this is why you don't cut promos for officials, because that's what the NBA does at times. You've got Madison Bumgarner with his umpire, where he gets tossed from a game because some umpire makes it a little personal, checking for the sticky stuff on his hands as he's dealing in a big baseball game, ends up getting tossed. I'm just curious what you guys think about the state of officiating right now in sports, because this is something Ennis and I used to talk about a lot, but are we becoming too fixated on it? Is there something where it's actually becoming worse? Is this just a confirmation bias chamber where we're not allowed to make fun of athletes in the same way or hammer athletes the same way, so now we're all kind of starting to do it to refs and officials? Where are we at with just kind of like what is happening right now with social media / fandom and the war versus officials? Because it to me, it feels more heightened than it ever has before.
Well, I think it can be a bit of both. I think that reffing can be starting to maybe dictate a lot of outcomes that we're not happy with. I think it can also be that we live in a social media era where people love to go back and find little snippets of things that are wrong and put that on there and put people on blast. I'm sure back in 1980, when you guys were 25 years old and growing up and watching sports, you didn't have the same amount of access to replays and stuff. I also think it's a good cop out for fans that don't want to admit that, you know, maybe their star player isn't as good, or maybe they just lost the game because they lost the game. So I think it's a lot of things, but I do think that it's becoming worse, whether that is something controllable or not. And as a player, it's frustrating because it's something you can't control, but it affects you every time you step up to the plate, you get on the ice, you're playing in a close game. So I think it's a lot of factors, but I also think there is a lot of it where it's being blown out of proportion just because of the date and the state of time that we live in right now.
Yeah, I think you're talking about two different things, right? Like, you're talking about the Vlad play. That's just we know so much.
Well, that's
now.
Wrong.
We know we can correctable mistakes, and mm-hmm. we should. And yeah, same with the strike zone. It's like, we know too much now that the human factor needs to be removed from officiating when we can clearly make things better in that regard. The other, like the techs and the animosity between umpires, and I mean, even Aaron Boone yesterday getting into it with an umpire. That I think that goes to, I mean, the culture at large here, where just everybody is ready to just lose it on somebody, right? Like, we all go out into the world just on edge, right? And I don't know if that's a last 2 years thing, but I just think everybody's kind of got this. I don't know if you want to call it social anxiety, but everybody is, you know, looking at everybody else, thinking about the possibility of them having these beliefs and these thoughts that are counter to what they believe, and my mortal enemy out there, and all of that is just like slightly below the surface. And I think, yeah, what we're seeing on sporting surfaces is kind of a reflection of what we're seeing on the streets.
I don't know. I think that's too large of a leap for me. I don't know, because I think athletes in professional sports circles, they live a completely different life than all of us. I think that if you're playing 162 games of baseball, I don't know how much like world politics you're taking into account, or how much like on edge you're having by being online too much. I think that I just can't tell if this is different from what umpiring or officiating was in the past. Like, I feel like you watch broadcasts now, and you'll hear entire broadcasts just dedicate themselves to talking about the officiating and talking about the refereeing. And I go, was it always like this? Am I just forgetting? I think that part of it is that no one is everything that you say about an athlete now is polarizing. You can have a mundane take and people will spin it as, oh, I can't believe you're taking this side on a player. Whereas the one thing that unites people online is you can rip officials. You can say it's the official's fault for something. That's not polarizing. No one's going to come. There's no officials Twitter, right? So in the absence of being able to criticize athletes the same way and criticize coaches the same way, because, you know, there's always someone that's going to turn it into something that your criticism is not, that we've created this universe where everything is on the officials. And I think that the officials have started to feel that a little bit in some of these sports, and they're actually acting out in kind, where they're going, you know what, if we are going to be such central figures to the plot, then we might as well play the part to a certain degree and take a little bit of a role.
Who would ever want to be an official? I think there's something
lunatics
to what you're saying, for sure.
It's a thankless job.
And I've been a little league umpire, and I liked having that small amount of power.
Nice.
But yeah, I can't imagine going through it. You know, the progression and event, you know, that's the goal of my life is to become a Major League Baseball umpire, especially now. Like, God, yeah. Who are these people? I think there's something to what you're saying as far as the online criticism, JD. Yeah, you're right. Like it's hard to like even.
But not just online. Like broadcast do it too, right? Like we all know the ones where it's just like nonstop, over the top. Everything is about the officiating officials, and I'm going, yeah. Hey, can I just hear something about the game? Was this game just the entire officiating? Like even the way that we've primed up this Leaf series, and we're accountable for it too. But we've talked about it a lot, which is, wow, the officiating is really going to dictate so much of the series. Sheldon Keefe talked about it going in. Now we're responding in kind with a lot of, well, is this playoff hockey? Is this officiating the way it's supposed to be? Like, it just feels as though it's become a way bigger story across all of the sports. And part of it, Ben, is exactly what you said, is we just know too much now, and we do have instant replay, and we do have the strike zone box, and so we're kind of primed for some of these things. But it's just, I don't know how we ever get away from it. Like, I don't know how we ever go back.
I think it's always existed. I really do think, I think that's a large part of it. Like, I was having this conversation yesterday about, you know, so Draymond flips off the fans in Memphis, mm-hmm. and we had the Kyrie stuff, and, you know, earlier this year in the Bronx, we had the Guardians outfielders, like, trying to scale the wall at Yankee Stadium, and is it worse than ever between fans and athletes? And then, you know, you think back to the early 60s, and Roger Maris was, like, for the home team trying to hit 60 home runs. He was getting death threats, right, in New York City.
That's always the same way.
No, that stuff is the same. And Don Denkinger, you know, cost the team a World Series as an umpire, I do think bad officiating has always existed. Just everything, all the conversations we have, everything is amplified because we know it. If it happens outside of your market, you wouldn't have known it 30 years ago. Now everybody knows it.
Blake, you got a thought on this?
Not particularly. I just think, you know, I've said this a couple times, is that we could be way more efficient and way more effective with this stuff, with centralized booths for controversial calls in each league. Just, we have the technology and the speed and the access of information to just not leave some of the things like the Vlad thing in the hands of officials in real time. I'm with you guys on, I don't want to lose the human element entirely, but clear yes, no stuff is entirely fixable. And the reason
I didn't say
fix
that
it is,
lose the human element. No, I want to lose all human elements. I want as least human element as we can. Take humans out of it. If humans don't have to be there, remove the humans. Because again, like, I don't know what the pipeline is of officiating. Eventually, this thing is going to get worse, right? It's not getting better because who's looking at these officials and saying, I want to be Angel Hernandez? Like, I can't imagine.
This is the thing I
always tell people when they complain about the NBA refs is like, ooh, go watch a G League or an NCAA game. There aren't better refs coming up the pipeline developing.
But this is it. All the leagues, everyone. You know how many debates I've actually had recently with people where it's, which is the most poorly officiated league? Like, I don't know why we're having these debates. Why do I know what Scott Foster's record is in games with Chris Paul? You know, like, why do I know these things? Why do I know who Scott Foster is? Why do I know who Andrew Hernandez is? Again, I understand that some of this is social media, and it bleeds into broadcasts sometimes more than we in the media would like to admit. I really do feel that this has become insane that I have now reached a point where I'm looking at this like I'm Neo in the Matrix, like I'm seeing this for what it is, which is that we're just not even talking about sports anymore. We won't criticize athletes, but we live to criticize officials, and there's nothing easier to do right now than criticize officials and talk about officials, get mad at officials, unite a fan base. Hey, you don't have to have a discussion about Fred VanVleet's impact on a series and what his future is, but if you say that the officials and they cost you with Joel Embiid, everybody's going to be cool with that. Everybody's going to be down with the idea of the officials need to be better. Just saying, feels like that. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Blake, do you want to do yours or you want me to do mine?
No, you just do one. You've been chewing. Keep chewing.
Are the Blue Jays bad at player-for-player trades? I said it with Rowdy Tellez, and I said it with Randall Grichuk. Are they just bad with player-for-player? They're clearly good with prospect-for-player. That seems to be just totally fine. But player-for-player, are the Blue Jays, is the Blue Jays front office bad at it? Are they bad?
So we're talking about those two trades in particular?
Yes. Those two trades look so bad right now. Imagine what this offense would look like if they had Rowdy Tellez and my guy Randall Grichuk. I'm the only person in the city who is upset about the Randall Grichuk trade still, and I doesn't understand it to save his life. And I'll tell you that it's just like, yeah, would I rather have the guy who is better defense and who has, you know, 300 points higher in OPS than Raimel Tapia for some reason? Yeah, like, of course I would. Of course I would. I don't know who in their right mind wouldn't. What reality are we living in which Raimel Tapia is as good as even old Randall? Like, there's no evidence of it other than he hits from the other side of the plate. And when it comes to Rowdy Tellez, Ben, you might not believe in him, but he was awesome right after the trade last year, and he's been awesome to start this year. So I don't know what you want to say about not believing in someone. He's got more track record than your boy Alejandro Kirk. So what do we think?
Track record of what? I mean, yeah, he's a fine player. Like, he plays first base. He's a DH. He'd better be...
We just
be,
said that's what they need!
Yeah, no, but he'd better be, like, a 900 OPS guy, right? Like, at least Kirk is... turned himself into a good defender at a premium defensive position. Or at
Look
least
at
a reasonable defender and a good call stealer behind the plate. Are they bad at player for player trades? I mean, and these two in particular, I think we got to let it play out, I guess, a bit on Tapia. But at the time, no, that was a bit of a head scratcher. That was more like, hey, you thought that was addition by subtraction, although they paid a lot of Randall's freight on the way out.
But not all of it.
Yeah, but some of it. It was, like, not quite
a cash World neutral. Series contenders. We need to make sure we save a little money on Randall Grichuk. Okay, just saying. Like,
well,
yeah, all right.
Also, Randall Grichuk, not the difference between, you know, this team winning a World Series and not.
Randall
but
Grichuk
no,
right now
always...
would be their fourth best hitter in this month.
Oh,
like that.
I
just
can't believe you're doing the Randall Grichuk thing again. Like, you can't be, right? Like,
I am.
No, this isn't.
I'm doing it.
It's not real life. Like,
it's real life.
Okay.
He's
right,
May April monster. Trade
season.
Him after May and April when his stock is high because this is when he rakes. This is his month.
So this
is
something to chew on here is if JD hates a guy or two, don't trade them because eventually they'll come around and JD will say he liked them all along.
Wow. No. Yeah, I did like Randall all along. That's the actual thing.
But this is why it's insane that we're still having this conversation because you went through 75 iterations of new Randall because you know you thought he figured it out and. You know, he was talking
I'm
to
not
Dante.
Saying he
Dante
figured
got
out.
Him straightened out, and he was, you know, moving up closer to
the pitching
the
machine.
Plate or
you got,
something.
You got the pitching machine.
No, guess what he is? Randall Grichuk. Now and forever. Yep. He and Kevin Pillar, like, as much as you want them to change and have a better strike zone recognition, they are who they are. Yeah. And those are, at times, decent players and probably rosterable players, but not difference makers. And Rowdy Tellez, I do not think is going to. I guess you can clip this and play it back to me. I do not think he's going to have a Hall of Fame All Star type career.
You love your goalposts. You love your goalposts moving today. This is an electric job by you.
The goalpost right now is Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah, like exactly. Oh, exactly. The goalpost right now is be better than Alejandro Kirk and his defense, which Ben, by the way, last year with Kirk was going when his defense was bad, was like, who cares about defense? Defense is overrated. It's irrelevant as long as you rake. And blah, blah. Yeah, exactly. And now it's like, oh, put him in the Hall of Fame for his defense because he caught a couple low strikes. And who cares if he hits? They need a DH. They traded one away. They
need
traded
to play
the guy
more Zach Collins. Let's see what Zach Collins is.
I agree. Where is? Why did they go away from Zach? He had Zach Collins had like one bad game, and then they went, oh, okay, now the Vinny Capra. It's like, why?
Well, JD, you're going to be kicking yourself about the Grichuk calling this a one-for-one trade in 6 years when little Adrian Pinto is
yes,
the new Vinny Capra.
He's like 5'2", like he had like an OPS of 2,000.
Did we get him?
Like the Mexican summer.
Yeah. Jay's got him?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
He's raking
in single A.
We have to go, but now guy. I have a secondary something to chew on brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Are the Toronto Blue Jays the team that get the little tiny guys and not the Toronto Maple Leafs? Alejandro Kirk, Vinny Capra, this Pinto guy. Maybe this is the front office who covets little tiny dudes with underlying numbers. Benny, thanks for making time today, as always. This was fun, even though you moved your goalposts. You got no consistency. You're all over the map. That's okay. We'll see you later, pal. When we come back, hit us with just your thoughts on the Leafs. We didn't get to it with Ben. We'll reset there. We want to know what you thought of last night's game and a remaining item from the A-list. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and A-list, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, JD Blake and Ailish on this Baby Friday, Cinco de Mayo, and Blake's birthday. What a spectacular day. Congratulations on being born this day many years ago.
Thanks.
Congratulations
I
to your mom.
Yeah, I couldn't have done
Denise
it without
Denise and Drumbo. It's a special
help.
Day for her.
Well, the way I look at it. Because, you know, you start to get a little older, and who cares about your birthday? As Ailish said, Blake and I have been alive since, what did you say? We were in college during the 80s?
If you
I don't
guys
know what
were in the 20s.
You
were in
since
your
20s, the Battle of Puebla, which is, the cause for the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the way I think a nice way of looking.
Speaking of moms, I've always appreciated that my birthday comes right before Mother's Day, so it's a reminder of like, oh yeah, I gotta give this present right back, or I gotta pay this right back.
Well, you're gonna re-gift your present to your mom?
No, I just mean the idea of, yeah, that'd be really funny. Give her back the same
mom,
gift
I got you a Thrasher t-shirt and a Slipknot album.
Ailish wouldn't appreciate this thought because she's too young and immature and thought and doesn't think about anyone by herself. And she's also not the oldest in her family. But the way I always looked at my birthday, and I think Blake would be probably a little bit the same, but that is the nice thing for Denise and Drumbo, is that, yes, it's Blake's birthday, but it's also when Denise and Drumbo became a mom, right? Because Blake's the oldest. So happy becoming a Mother's Day to Denise and Drumbo. You raised
and a reminder
son.
To everyone else out there that it is Mother's Day on Sunday. Get your flowers in order. Get your gifts in order.
Or just,
what do
you know,
mothers want for Mother's Day? That's a
what
good
I
question.
Did. What I did, you bozos.
You
I
took
I,
to the Blue Jays game.
I get my mom to the city. She comes here. My dime, my thing.
But
go take her.
She brought a whole suitcase to the game. No. So
some of us are not able to do things with other people right now.
Whatever. I'm just saying that what you do, if, okay, children. Listen to me. Your mom doesn't want the flowers, okay? That's a nice little touch. You can add the flowers to the very cherry on the top. But you have
die.
To send the cherries to the the flowers to the office, the cherry on top to the office, because otherwise who cares? Your parents are posting stuff to Facebook still. They don't know where to put it. You know, it just goes into the ether. You got to do stuff with them. This is all your mom wants you to do, is to go take her and do a thing with your mom. And if you take your mom to go do a thing, whether it's a dinner, whether it's a walk, if you're broke, whatever, it doesn't matter. Just go do something with your mom on Mother's Day. Like, if you can go be with your mom, go be with your mom. That's all they want. It's the easiest thing ever. Again, Ailish wouldn't know. Immature, thoughtless, rude, whatever. She's just
Let
young.
Let me tell you what I used
no
to do
perspective.
For my mom. For Mother's
used
Day,
to
all the time.
Yeah, used to.
Okay, well, they've moved.
You made her a card and you said, all these chores I'll do for you, Mama, and then you did none of the chores.
I am a wonderful, loving daughter, okay? Mm-hmm. We used to take her to Canada Blooms, which is a flower garden festival.
You got your mom flowers on Mother's Day? Whoa.
No, it was like this giant indoor exhibition where it was just like flowers and like Garvey had a heyday walk around. Look at these lilies. We should get some bulbs. Oh, look at this fence post. We should.
But that's great. That's fence post.
It was
post.
Really sweet, but that's what she wanted. And it was very nice to have, you know, like an excursion. I agree with you. Here's a necklace. Goes in a drawer. Yeah, here's flowers drawer. And they die a week later. Die. But I like, you know, make sure you do something special with your mothers that they'll remember.
Yeah, just don't frame it as you used to do it. If you're going to do that, you got to do the Mitch Hedberg. I used to get my mom something for Mother's Day. I still do, but I used to, too.
Yeah, Ayla Snow clearly did it one time. She's like, well, that's enough for me. I did it once. Again,
my mom listens to this, all she's organized probably by trying Jordy to figure too. Out how to text in because she's so distraught.
Yeah, oh, yeah. She's also, Ayla, while wait for Mother's Day, saying that her mom doesn't know how to text, trying to text in when we give it every day. Doesn't think her mom is technologically savvy. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Ayla called you old. Wow, really nice. Real nice. Real classy. But yeah, spend time. Why don't we as Canadians celebrate Cinco de Mayo, by the way? That's the other thing in this that we need to discuss, is why is this not a holiday for us? Like, Cinco de Mayo is such a big thing in the States. You go to the States and Cinco de Mayo, and it's one of truly the greatest days of the year. You show up here, go, what are you guys doing down here? And they go, it's Cinco de Mayo. You ever heard of it? And I go, I'm Canadian, so no. It sucks. We need to take this and make it more our thing, too.
Blake, have you celebrated both at the same time? Birthday and Cinco de Mayo?
No, I am not. I don't have Mexican ancestry.
Said that so hard.
I don't think you need to have that.
Yeah, I don't think actually, I know you don't, because as someone who has celebrated it in both California and Florida, I can tell you conclusively you do not.
Every year at school, we would have a Cinco de Mayo celebration.
Really?
Of course.
Yes, I went to school in the United States. It was like an excuse for a massive 4-day bender. Yeah.
Blake's like, you guys had excuses to drink in university.
You guys went out at university?
You guys did things? You guys weren't at like math club?
Socialization time?
Was it in the math only thing, club? Yeah. I was too advanced for math club.
He
was working,
in the cribbing
working
club.
Multiple jobs. I was being a TA and an RA.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Because you liked RA. Of course you were an RA. Everyone who's an RA is a narc, and that's just a fact. But yeah, Blake, the only thing.
Have to be a narc, but you do get free room and board and food.
Yeah, that's what the narcs say. You got the narc code ready to go right there. I'm the narc.
Well. You go ask Leggett Hall to be if they ever got in trouble from their RA.
No bottles, guys. I've said this 13 times before. No bottles.
If you're gonna throw up, do it in the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, yo, you were the. Oh, that's cool. That Blake's the
Where
worst
are
RA.
Your Blake, shower shoes.
I know. Blake was the quote unquote cool RA. Is the way that he's putting that there. That he's like, I was friends with everybody on my floor. They were not your friends. They did not like you.
Not friends, but. I certainly wasn't getting people in trouble for drinking in first year.
Oh, that's the best. The cool RA. There's nothing like, hey, man, I don't want to break up your vibes, guys.
You've seen undergrads, right?
Time. Yeah. Just, guys, I don't want to screw things. I want you to have fun. Man. Just responsibly.
Like,
and under the rules. It's cool to have fun under the rules. The rules are we have to take a break right now. This is a little bit of a discombobulated hour, which means it was one of my favorite ones. But yes, let's get back on track with old Big Buddha, Nick Kyprios, who I'm guessing is going to have some takes today. What did he make of the Leafs' response to Tampa? What do we expect from that team Friday night? Nick Kyprios. Real Kipper and Born, the Big Buddha, next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ayler, Sports F5 Night of the Fan.